Horses on 2FM.
Well, a big thank you to both Emma and Roz for teeing us up for the weekend in perfect fashion. It's been a great few weeks with the girls. But don't forget the two Johnnies will be back from Monday. But for now, it is Friday, the 12th of August. I'm Shane Dawson, and I sincerely hope you're enjoying the sunshine while you're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7 bells, we'll be reflecting on a night of near misses for St. Pat's and Tala. We'll also be previewing this evening's League of Ireland matches, as well as the English Premier League, in the company of Alan Colley and Fergal Brennan. Darren Frehill and Cathal Dennehy will be keeping us updated, I should say, with the latest from the European Championships, both in Rome and Munich. Jane Mangan will also be joining us to chat all things horse racing on this Friday evening. As always, if you want to get in touch, well, please do. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Hello there, and good evening. It's great to have your company on this Friday evening on a day of, well, a packed day of European Championship action. There was action in the pool, which we will be getting to in a few moments' time. But first, just to get you a update and a roundup of today's action, three Irish boats have sealed final places at the European Championships in Munich, with Aoife Casey through to the A final of the lightweight women's singles sculls, competing in the opening heat. Casey finished first in a time of 8 minutes 15.73 seconds. Her final is scheduled for Sunday at 10:36 a.m. In a tight finish to the lightweight women's doubled skulls, Lydia Heffey and Margaret Kremen came home in front of Switzerland. The Irish duo's time of 7 minutes 39.15 seconds was just 0.03 seconds faster. So a very tight one there. Their final also taking place on Sunday. Fiona Murta and Emily Hegarty were first in the women's pair. Their time of 7 minutes 40.28 seconds was over 4 seconds ahead of Greece. The final on Saturday commences at 10:44 a.m. Unfortunately, though, due to illness, Sunita Paspura and Zoe Hyde had to withdraw from their double skulls event. That had a knock-on effect, with Ireland unable then to take part in the women's eight, where coxswain Leo Regan, Fiona Murta, Emily Hegarty, Emer Lam, Tara Hanlon, Afric Kyo and Natalie Long were also due to compete. The Irish women's team pursuit squad of Lara Gillespie, Kelly Murphy, Mia Griffin and Alice Sharp defeated Poland in the first round of the European Championships, completing the 4,000 metre team pursuit in a time of 4 minutes 26.028 seconds. That was enough just to progress to the first round and the race against the Poles. So no medals there, but a respectable sixth place overall finish, and a very respectable top 10 finish for Emily Kay in the scratch race final. Emily finished in ninth place. But just before we came on air, there was loads of action in the pool today in Rome, and RT Sports' Darren Frehill is in Rome, and we can join him, similar to yesterday, from a very sunny Rome. And Darren, Mona McSharry and Niamh Coyne were the semi-final representatives. Disappointment for Niamh Coyne, but success for Mona McSharry.
Absolutely, Shane. Great, great news here poolside. Mona McSharry qualifying for the European final in the 100-metre breaststroke. Mona clocked a brilliant 1.0644. She was in the second heat, the third quickest time across the two semi-finals, and she can start planning for that final tomorrow. And because it's the third quickest time, I think we can all start hoping and wishing her she'll medal in this particular race, because she has given herself an amazing chance. The platform, I have to say, Shane, really came for this morning, because she swam her best time of the season in this event and managed that semi-final stage as the seventh quickest, and I think she actually got great confidence from that. I spoke to her a short time ago and she was pretty happy with herself.
Feels a little bit like my old self there this afternoon, which is nice. Definitely nice to be back down at a 106, you know, and competing and just racing and enjoying it.
That time, that's close to your best.
Yeah, no, I'm very happy with that time. You know, I said to myself I wanted to go 106, something 106, and I thought that would make it back. So 106.4 is just great. You know, that's basically on my PB.
And over the course of the two semi-finals, I know you won't be reading too much into this, you have a race to run tomorrow, but it's the third quickest from the two semi-finals. That must give you a great heart and confidence.
Yeah, you know, it definitely does, and you know, you never know what's going to happen, but it's nice to go back, debrief, have the morning off tomorrow to relax, and then just come back and, you know, give it my all. Made it to the final now, so that's the next thing, is just hands on the wall first.
And with the Olympics, getting to the final, the bronze in December, like, there was pressure on you. Do you feel a bit relieved you're actually there now in the final?
Definitely. You know, I think I put the most pressure on myself. I think I build up my expectations and put them as everyone else is looking for that too, but really it's just me, and you know, that's what drives me and keeps me going. But yeah, it is a bit of a relief now. We can just relax, and you know, made it to the final, so just race.
Yeah, and we're all very proud of you back home. A final one, would you like to add some silverware to what you have already?
Oh, always. It's always nice to add to the collection. I send it home and my parents can find somewhere to store it.
Good luck with it.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. She sounds in great spirits. Two things really stood out for me there. The first one, I think, was about putting so much pressure on herself, and that seems to be gone now. And the other one is that she's back to her best. I think she really is. That final will take place tomorrow at 5:30 or thereabouts Irish time. Live coverage on RTE Sport on that one. And Niamh Coyle, you mentioned her at the top, Shane. She also competed in this race. She has not progressed from the first semi-final, but I just want to say she swam a super race, clocked 1.08 seconds, 11th overall, but unfortunately only the top eight make the final, and the top eight are there on real merit.
Absolutely. Darren Frehill, thank you very much for taking the call live from Rome. So very big congratulations to Mona McSharry for qualifying for the final, and hopefully there will be a medal in store for the swimmer. Away from the European Championships, just a bit of news in cycling. Ryan Mullen and Sam Bennett have been selected for the Vuelta a España, meaning Ireland continues its run of at least one cyclist in a Grand Tour for each year since 2006. And word on Leona Maguire, she has kept herself in the mix at the ISPS Handa World Invitational with a 3-under par 69 that left her three shots off the clubhouse leader. So Leona going very well there. But time to turn our attention to association football. We will be previewing the Premier League in a few moments' time. Fergal Brennan will be joining us, but Alan Colley is standing across from me. And Alan, before we chat about English soccer and before we even preview the League of Ireland, it is time to reflect and review on a frustrating night for St. Patrick's Athletic in Talla.
Yeah, really disappointing, Shane. I put a tweet out last night just saying that they'll be kicking themselves this morning when they look back on the game, because when you get to this level of competition, and obviously we're probably more often than not, you'll be the underdogs going into the games against the opposition that we face. St. Pat's actually dominated for three quarters of this tie, never mind just last night. They were the better team over in Bulgaria, and then last night as well, they were much the better team, particularly in the second half, Shane. But it's the goals that they gave away, they'll be really disappointed with, particularly the first one. Mm. Like, when, if a team who's superior, then you carve you open and they create an opportunity or score a world-class goal, sometimes you just have to hold your hands up. But when you're conceding off a set piece in the manner in which St. Pat's did, that they've only themselves to blame as well. It was so poor so early in the game as well. They'll be bitterly disappointed with that. But in saying that, they regrouped, they got themselves back into the game a little bit more composed. Then they took over for large spells, but the sucker punch of a goal that was the penalty, and I look back on a few times, initially I did think it was a penalty, but I think the referee, who was poor overall for both teams on the night, chain, I think the CSKA Sofia player actually handles it first, and then Brocklebank comes in and he obviously handles it, and I think that's where obviously the referee just sees that one.
I'd even question the free that led to the penalty as well.
That one was never a free. And he was so poor on the night, he really was, and it was a bit stop start and a bit bitty, and their discipline was really poor. I felt St. Pat's did well actually not to get embroiled in that and dragged into that, because their discipline was really, really poor, Sofia. But they'll be just bitterly disappointed, because there are a couple of brilliant chances. O'Reilly on the night, who had played really well, and considering it was such a warm evening as well, his energy levels are serious, and he's had a real impact since he's come to St. Pat's. I was actually thinking maybe Preston may take him back, but they're leaving him there, which is good for St. Pat's until the end of the season. But he played really well on the night, had a brilliant chance in the first half. Then in the second half, there was one that broke to him as well, he didn't get a great contact on it, and Anto Breslin had a brilliant chance also that he didn't get a great contact on. So overall, when you consider the level of opposition, the stage of competition that you're at, the opportunities that arise, the finances that are on offer, they'll be bitterly, bitterly disappointed, Shane, because it was a missed opportunity.
Well, one player that was bitterly disappointed was Jamie Lennon. He was chatting to Cathal Mullany last night.
We're disappointed, like if you saw the dressing room now, you know, you'd look at faces that had full belief we can get a result here tonight, and to come away 2-0 down is really good. It's disappointing, it's hard to take. We can take a lot of positives from it, I suppose, from the performance going into the league ahead, but we really had our eyes set on trying to get through to the next round. So,
what sort of a game did it feel like when you were playing out there? Because it seemed very stop-start in the second half, at least, with all the referees' decisions in terms of free kicks and stuff like that.
Yeah, it probably was a feisty enough game. Kind of the week building into it, or the last couple of days, it's felt like a big game, you know, and we haven't had that in a while. So coming into it, I suppose you're going to get that kind of reaction from players, like, trying to set the tone in the game early on. And yeah, there was yellows given out, but that's the way it goes. It was both teams. I'd say it was probably a good game to watch if you're a spectator, but on the pitch it was hectic, but an enjoyable game.
So St. Pat's will be back in league action on Sunday when they take on Sligo Rovers, who did finish their European run with a victory in the showground. So it's nice to finish off with a victory, albeit going out on aggregate. But their run under new manager, well, newish manager John Russell, has been certainly commendable. But just looking ahead at this evening's League of Ireland fixtures, Alan, it has been 6 weeks since four League of Ireland Premier Division matches were held on a Friday night, with Europe dominating proceedings. Thoughts will slowly switch back towards domestic action, and there some mammoth games this evening. Derry City can put themselves into a position to challenge for the title when they welcome Shamrock Rovers to the Ryan McBride Brandywell, fresh from their group stage qualification. Elsewhere, Dundalk will look to take advantage of the team above and below them clashing tonight. They travel to Dalymount Park to take on a Bohemians team still sore from their surprise loss in Sligo last week after taking a one goal lead. There are two massive games at the bottom, with Finn Harps hosting UCD in a pivotal fixture in the race to avoid automatic relegation, and Drogheda United host a well-rested Shelburne side after a controversial postponement last week. The less said about that, the better. Shells are possible contenders for Europe. Possible, I stress, sitting just 5 points off fourth with some games to play, while Drogs will be conscious they could be sucked closer to the bottom two positions. Again, every fixture has a great deal riding on it tonight, and a number of positional changes certainly possible at the end of the night. Before I get your thoughts, Alan Colley, on Derry City versus Shamrock Rovers, Eric White is up in the Brandywell for us.
Fresh from their heroics in Europe, Shamrock Rovers return to domestic duties, 6 points clear of Dundalk and 8 ahead of Derry. The Hoops wanted an extra 24 hours to prepare for this game following their return from North Macedonia in midweek, but that request was turned down by Derry, which will only add spice to the occasion. With Stephen Bradley's side now facing a congested fixture list, rotation will be key. Simon Power is available, having missed their win over Scoopy through injury. Jack Byrne could also feature, but Chris McCann remains out. Defeat for Derry would surely spell the end of their title ambitions. The Candy Stripes are unbeaten in their last six league games. Midfielder Will Patching faces a late fitness test as they eye a Brandywell double over the champions, having beaten them with an injury time winner here back in February. Kickoff is at 7:45.
So it is first against third in a match that is going ahead. It's going ahead tonight. Derry City weren't for moving. Should be a tasty encounter given the situations around the fixture, but also be given it's two teams near the top of the table.
Yeah, because of the rivalry, Shane, and what's on offer, as you say, at the top of the table. And I think from Derry City's point of view, it's a real good opportunity to face Shamrock Rovers coming off the back of, obviously, the last few weeks, and they've been such a busy few weeks for Shamrock Rovers. And if they're ever going to have a chance of maybe taking 3 points off them and closing that gap, and maybe sensing that there may just be a little bit of life left in this title race, I think they have to take full advantage of that tonight and get the 3 points. When you look at the top of the table, Dundalk have themselves a tough game away to Bowes, but again, if they have aspirations to close the gap, and I think, to be fair, whilst it's amazing for Shamrock Rovers and getting into the group stage, and it's brilliant for the league as well, I think it's good for the league title race, Shane, because I think Dundalk and Derry, we've all felt for a long time as if Shamrock Rovers may kind of stroll to this league title. But when you look at it, there's still only 6 points between themselves and Dundalk and 8 points between themselves and Derry. If Derry were to win tonight, it's back to five with the same amount of games played. Obviously, we all know about what's to come for Shamrock Rovers in terms of the fixture schedule as well. So both of those teams, both Rory Higgins as manager of Derry and Stephen O'Donnell as manager of Dundalk, he will definitely be re-emphasising to his players that there's plenty of life left in this title race, but they have to take full advantage tonight and get the 3 points.
Well, one one team that will be looking to take full advantage tonight is second place Dundalk. You're heading over to Dalymount Park after this evening's game on. Bows a bit hit and miss. They've lost a lot of players. There's been quite a number of new signings as well, one of which Jonathan Afolabi, which I'm really excited to see how he gets on with Bohemians. But again, this is a match that I suspect there won't be much between both sides.
No, and I watched, I was in the showgrounds last week for Bohemians against Sligo Rovers, and I didn't recognise Bohemians, Shane. You mentioned the amount of changes. I've seen a lot of Bohemians this season and last season, and I actually didn't recognise them. They look like a proper men's team, whereas the last few weeks and months they've looked like a boys team with Dawson Devoy and Ross Tierney and a lot of the young lads that have come through, Andy Lyons and whatever. They've actually a lot of lads who look like senior professionals now and men, and I think that's good for them because I think that's what's been missing, that bit of experience maybe from seasoned campaigners and professionals around the place. So they have made a lot of changes. The club have backed Keith Long in the transfer market, and obviously the recruitment that they've made and bringing a lot of players in. I think he has to deliver now on the fact that the club have backed them as well. And it was a disappointing result. They played quite well against Sligo Rovers. They took the lead as well. One of the new signings, O'Sullivan, scored, but then they let Sligo Rovers back into the game and the game changed within 5 or 6 minutes. So they'll be disappointed with that, especially the fact that Sligo had the European game as well on the Thursday before they played them. But it's a huge game tonight, and I just think because of what's on offer for Dundalk, I think it's a bigger night for Dundalk than it is Bows, and I think they have the incentive to go and get the 3 points and get the victory and close the gap on Shamrock Rovers.
And briefly then, UCD, Finn Harps and Drogheda United versus Shells. I think it's fair to say Shelburne are safe from relegation. Drogheda, I don't think they'll be dragged back down into it, but who knows. But UCD, Harps as well, Ollie Horgan, a man on the mission again, similar to Bows, a few changes for Finn Harps as well, but never write off Ollie Horgan.
No, and they have made a lot of changes, and that was backed up with the victory last week, and they need a much needed victory against Strada. They were in desperate need of a win. They got the win. That may kickstart them. Obviously, this run of games that they're playing, the likes of Drogheda, UCD, are winnable games in their eyes, so they have to pick up points against both those clubs. They did that last week. They'll feel much the same tonight, obviously going against UCD. But UCD, on the other hand, have picked up the odd result in recent weeks as well, and they'll also fancy their chances because the gap is very close between them to obviously avoid that automatic relegation spot. So I think that's a huge game as well. Shelburne, you mentioned relegation. There's no fear in relegation. No worries, Shane.
You tell that to Shelburne fans. We're a pessimistic bunch, Alan.
No, they'll be fine. And I actually think, you mentioned there in the intro about them being only 5 points off the top four, they should have real aspirations. And I'm sure Damien Duff and maybe kind of in the group themselves, they'll be, well, I won't say dreaming of that, but they'll certainly be believing that they may be able to reach the heights of it, because it's very open between the other clubs that are obviously, like, I know Pats have had a good run in Europe and Sligo Rovers, but their domestic form has been very up and down, all those clubs, Bows as well. So I think Shells are right in the mix to maybe get that final European spot.
I can see it now, the Pats Shells match doesn't get refixed, Shells get the points, it's the Marnie affair all over again. League of Ireland fans of a certain vintage will remember that, and I'm sure my producer John Farrell will remember that St. Patrick's Athletic registration.
Who got
issues.
The league last year?
I can't remember. 51552. Yeah, I believe it was Pats, but I'm not sure. Just to wrap up, first division fixtures: Bray Wanderers, Longford, Cork, Treaty in a Munster derby, Waterford versus Galway, Wexford Cove, and the Women's National League is on tomorrow afternoon. Shelburne welcome Treaty to Talca Park. It's their final game before their European adventure to Slovenia. Sligo Rovers versus Bohemians, DLR Waves and Piemont, Cork versus Athlone and Galway versus Wexford. And just to mention that League of Ireland fans will be able to watch Shamrock Rovers home and away fixtures against Hungarian champions Ferencváros in the UEFA Europa League playoff round on RTE television. The SSE Electricity League champions travel to Budapest next Thursday for the first leg with a 5:30 p.m. Irish time kickoff. And a week later, the Hoops welcome the Hungarians to Tallaght Stadium for the return leg with an 8 p.m. kickoff, and both games will be broadcast live on RTE2 and the RTE Player. So, Shinné, for domestic football, time to turn our attention to the Premier League. And Alan, we're going to welcome Fergal Brennan into the conversation. And Fergal, I'm going to throw the first question towards yourself, because the early kickoff is Aston Villa versus Everton. Everton should have defender Connor Cody and midfielder Amadou Onana making their debuts, but they missed a specialist striker in their defeat by Chelsea and still look light up front, it is fair to say, even with perhaps Solomon Rondon coming back from suspension. I didn't see Villa losing to Bournemouth at all in terms of predictions anyway, so that one caught me by a bit of surprise, but they really need a positive result here. And is it too early to say Steven Gerrard under pressure, Fergal?
I think it's a potential. I think if you're looking for a manager under pressure in this game, it's Lampard over Gerrard, as it stands, certainly in terms of what the bookies are saying. And some of the conversations floating around, I've been speaking to a couple of Everton fans this week as part of build-up to the game. And obviously the survival from relegation last season has bought him a little bit of time, but it's been a poor summer in terms of transfer business. You mentioned the two new players coming in, Cody and Onana. Yep, that has boosted them to an extent, but the main position that they need cover, and now with Calvert-Lewin being out injured, they need a starter, is up front, and that still hasn't happened. Lampard said in his press conference today that they are still looking, they'll keep plugging away for the next couple of weeks, but there's not a lot to be excited about Everton at the moment. Connor Cody himself is a fairly steady operator. He's not someone that's going to drive them up the table. He'll someone who come in and make them a bit tighter defensively, similarly to Tarkowski, who's come in as well. Onana's an interesting one, based on the bits and pieces that I've seen from him in France. I do think he's a bit similar to what Everton already have in that area. So I would say, in terms of the positions that both of the managers are in, I'd say Lampard is actually under a bit more pressure. The focus, unfortunately, for Bournemouth last weekend wasn't so much on them winning back in the Premier League. It was actually on Villa losing. And Gerrard has this ongoing standoff with Tyrone Mings as well. He's taken the captaincy off him and he's given it to John McGinn. So I'd say both of them are under a bit of pressure, but certainly Lampard more as it stands, because it won't take Everton fans long to effectively say, yes, we stayed up last year, but we want more now. And if he's not delivering that, then it could be a tough couple of months for him.
So that is the early kickoff, 12:30 tomorrow. A few 3 p.m. kickoffs. Alan, I'm going to let you choose where you want to start. Arsenal, Leicester, Brighton, Newcastle. Fergal mentioned Bournemouth there. The going to be a tall order for the tallest team in the league to try and keep Alan and City quiet. They're away to Manchester City, Southampton versus Leeds. Of course, Irish interest there with Gavin Bazunu, and indeed Wolves versus Fulham. What tickles your fancy, Alan Colley?
I'm going to go to Arsenal, Shane, because I'm watching the documentary at the moment.
Okay.
And it's really, really interesting, and I'm very torn on Arteta. So, and I said this last week, some parts of the documentary I think, oh yeah, I really like this and I love his management style, and then there's other parts where I'm cringing behind the couch looking at it, Shane. But the episode I watched last night was about Aubameyang and the exit and all, and I think he handled it really, really well. He was really strong in his management. He speaks a lot about the culture he's trying to create and the non-negotiables is what he calls them, in terms of what he wants from his players and what he expects from them. And I just liked how he handled the whole situation, because Aubameyang, something like we see with the Pogba situation or the modern player, where they have all the power, the highest earner at the club, almost kind of nearly too big for the club in some instances, the player in their mind, and for him to tackle that situation and go after it the way he did at a time when they were struggling as well last January, when they hadn't scored in something like 500-600 minutes and they were under real pressure. But he stuck by his guns, and I really like the way he handled it. As I say, they got off to a brilliant start last week with a very good performance against Crystal Palace. I like what he done in the win as well, obviously during the summer, bringing in Jesus and Zinchenko. They hit the ground running, both of them were excellent. And when he's speaking about the culture and the environment he's trying to create in terms of the professional standards and what they're setting, both of those players are coming from as high as it gets in terms of Man City, so they'll only add to that as well. So I really like what's happening at the moment where Arteta, and I hope they can build on that. And for him alone, I think, because a young manager starting off in his career, like, obviously you had the chat with Fergal there about managers, and again something similar with young managers with Gerrard and Lampard, the fans are so quick to turn on them, and it can be a really kind of lonely place to be, I presume, for a manager when it does kind of take a wrong turn. But for him to stick by his guns in such a situation that he did, and now obviously he has his team that he wants on the pitch in terms of real exciting young talent as well. Saliba, the centre half, coming in, played really well also last week. I would just like to see him maybe go on and do something good with Arsenal this year, so hopefully they can pick up where they left off. But it was a good performance last week against Palace.
Not to be singling out any managers, but potentially Brendan Rodgers could be under a bit of pressure soon. They've been a bit quiet. Like, I don't know what to expect from Leicester.
And Rodgers is one who I'm a huge fan of.
Yeah.
I think that's more to do with whatever's going on at the club, because I think Rodgers, there could be a bit of a standoff there, Shane, in terms of the fact that the players obviously that he probably would have wanted to bring in to strengthen the squad, because they do need two or three players maybe to come in and strengthen what's there and what's a very good 11. You look at the team that played Brentford last week, I felt the starting 11 was still very, very good, but they don't have the squad depth, and especially if they lose Fofana as well, it'll be a huge blow. But there seems to be a bit of a standoff there going on at the moment with Rodgers and the hierarchy at the club, but I think they need obviously more players to come in if they're going to do any better this season.
Well, if there is any managerial changes, Fergal, perhaps the managers of both Brighton and Newcastle, I know Eddie Howe has just signed a new deal, so he probably won't want to leave the financially safe, to say the least, Newcastle United, but two young managers who are going head to head as well. I want to get your thoughts on that, and also Fergal, I want to get the thoughts from outside of Ireland, the views on Gavin Bazunu, because I suspect he's going to be a very busy man for Southampton this year, and how their season progresses there at home to Leeds.
Well, on the two managers, Potter and Howe, as you mentioned, obviously Eddie Howe's just signed that new contract, and Newcastle, we expect them to spend. Maybe not too much between the end of this transfer window, but January and then next summer, they've got their objectives set out in terms of where they want to be. Potter will be linked with every club that potentially sack their manager that are above Brighton. I don't think there's any major moves from his part. I think he's very happy with Brighton. What he's got at Brighton is a perfect scenario of the players buy into what he's trying to do. The club back him completely. When they sell big players, obviously they've lost Bissouma and Cucurella this summer, they look to strengthen, they look to bring in new players. And the process is the most important thing at Brighton Football Club. And that's why they get results like they did last weekend at Manchester United. And that's, to give Ten Hag a little bit of credit, I think that was an example of a team that's been coached brilliantly for a couple of seasons compared to a team that hopefully has been at least coached well for a couple of months. And I think Graham Potter's a very good manager, but I think he'll stick where he is for now, because it's quite a safe position. In terms of Bazunu, I felt a bit sorry for him last weekend. Obviously, Southampton got slapped by Tottenham. I don't really think he was at fault for any of the goals, but I think the most impressive thing from him was his professionalism. He's got a very experienced defence in front of him that played poorly, and he was giving it to them if they made a mistake. Obviously, the own goal from Salisu was unfortunate. But his performance, the set, he made two or three very good saves to keep it from being six or seven. But what I really like about him, and this is the same when he plays for Ireland as well, is the professionalism, the standards that he demands of himself at 3-4 goals in the back of the net for the youngest goalkeeper starting on the opening weekend of the Premier League season. It'd be easy for him to maybe go into his shell a little bit, and that just isn't the case with him. He's very confident that he's ready for this challenge. He could have gone to a Championship club this summer, but no, he feels he's ready for the Premier League. Ralph Hasenhüttl agrees, and obviously letting in four goals on your Premier League debut is a tough one to take, but he seems to be made of really, really strong stuff. I don't think it'll affect him massively. Another tough test this weekend, but let's see how he does, because he's such an exciting prospect, and he's a standard setter, and that's what Southampton need, and that's what Ireland need as well.
Absolutely, and it's great to see him getting some game time, because I know Bournemouth bringing in Neto from Barcelona might mean Mark Travers might get as much game time from an Irish goalkeeping perspective. I want to chat Brentford versus Manchester United, but before I do, Alan, in a single word, Wolves or Fulham?
Wolves,
there you go. Wolves are going to win. Brentford, Manchester United. I'm almost exasperated even when I just chat about Manchester United. They'll be debuting their highlighter green or puke green, whatever way you want to phrase it. New third kit, I believe. So they'll be wearing a lovely new kit. Manchester United, discuss.
Yeah, where do you start, Shane? Obviously, it was the worst possible start for them last week. And whatever about the defeat in terms of losing to Brighton, I think it was more due to the fact that the performance was so bad, and I suppose coming off the back of a decent pre-season, people were hoping things would change. I never felt they were going to change overnight, but for them to happen and start as bad as they did may have came as a little bit of a surprise to people, just how poor it was, because it was dreadful, Shane, it really was. And a lot of the same problems and reoccurring problems that we've all seen over the last 18 months, 2 years. So I think Ten Hag, of course, he has a massive job on his hands. Just in terms of the game on tomorrow evening, I think it's going to be really difficult, because Brentford themselves are a plucky, resilient bunch. Kind of, you look at the squad that they have, and I wouldn't call them journeymen players, but players who are obviously never played at maybe the highest level, but of a very, very good standard themselves. Well, I think a very good manager also. Yeah. They came back from 2-0 down last week, so it showed their character and the resilience, as I mentioned, that they have in the group as well, and drew to all. And I just think, looking at, and this is one that probably we haven't seen before, but you look at Martinez, who's the new signing, and a lot of the focus last week was on the lads who were probably there Fred, McTominay, yeah. Dalo, these lads making mistakes. But I just worry about Martinez and where he's going to be tested massively is when he comes up against the big bustling centre forward, hence a Mikel Antonio or the likes of Ivan Toney at the weekend, because all week I'm sure they have been practicing and him pulling on to that kind of smaller centre half, avoiding Harry Maguire, and he'll cause all sorts of problems, Toney, for them. So even though Brentford, as I mentioned, are a plucky bunch, they can get it down and play some very good football as well. But I think the more direct they are against Man United at the weekend, especially with the problems that United have, and if they really go after them in front of that crowd and atmosphere as well, I think they can kind of really make inroads towards getting a result, and I think Toney will cause all sorts of problems.
Okay, we'll be interested to see how that one goes. Mikael Damsgaard, of course, pretty much the replacement for Christian Eriksen for Brentford in terms of marquee signings. The match I'm probably looking forward to most, Fergal, is on Sunday. So Nottingham Forest West Ham is the 2 p.m. kickoff on Sunday, but at 4:30 it is Spurs against Chelsea. Chelsea love playing against Tottenham Hotspur. They beat them 4 times last season, and Tottenham have only beaten them once in the league at Stamford Bridge since February 1990. Conte returning to Stamford Bridge. So many subplots. Should be a cracker.
It should indeed. As you say, there's plenty swirling around, and I think based on the opening weekend, as we touched on there with Southampton and Bazunu, I thought Tottenham were the best team from the opening weekend in terms of performance and results. And the most impressive aspect of that was probably Conte's thrown down a bit of a challenge to his existing players to say, I've just brought in Richarlison, Perisic, Jed Spence, etc. You need to keep performing or your place is under threat. And you look at the important performances from last weekend, Ryan Sessegnon getting his first Premier League goal for Spurs, Eric Dier, I think it was his first goal since 2019, and then Dejan Kulusevski, who for me has been one of the best players in the Premier League since the start of 2022. That's what he needs to strike as a balance. We know they're an excellent team, and particularly that front three of Son, Kane, Kulusevski. He needs to keep those players looking over the shoulder and thinking, we've got to keep every week 8, 9 out of 10, or we're going to be under pressure. That seems to have gone so brilliantly so far based on the first weekend of the season. Chelsea, I'm still a little bit unsure because we know that everything has been delayed with them. Obviously, the sanctions in place from April and May meant that their business was delayed. I think the signings they brought in are good, particularly Sterling. I know Alan mentioned that last week. I think he'll be good for them. I think he'll score goals with a regularity that they've not had for some time. But I look at other areas of the squad. I think that they're lacking a bit of pace, particularly through the middle of the team. Jorginho can get exposed. Thiago Silva can get exposed. Koulibaly was okay last weekend for them at Everton, but I think up against Spurs, particularly with Son on one side and Kulusevski on the other, you've got quite an experienced, to be kind, but definitely a slow back three, and you're relying on Cucurella, if he makes his debut, to help out. He's not known for the defensive side of his game. Reece James on the other side is a bit more consistent. I think there's a real opportunity for Spurs here, and they just seem driven. Conte's just wound them up and wound them up, whereas I think Chelsea probably got a few more faces to come in the transfer window. I'm not quite sure what the plan is for them this season. I still think they'll be in the reckoning for top four, and I think they'll probably get it, but in terms of form and in terms of readiness, it's Spurs at the moment.
Well, it will be interesting to see in terms of new signings as well. Aubameyang, apparently Xavi wants him to stay at Barca. Tuchel wants to reunite Aubameyang. Of course, Aubameyang and Tuchel were together at Dortmund. Fergal Brennan, thank you very much. Alan Colley, thank you very much. You'll be back on Monday to review all of the weekend's soccer action. Enjoy Daly Mount Park.
Thanks, Shane.
Good League of Ireland evening. Alan, thank you. Fergal, thank you. Do stay with us because we're going to be turning our attention to the European Championships up next in the company of Cathal Dennehy, live from Munich. RTE 2FM. Now, good evening. You're very welcome back to Game On. On this very sunny evening, we reviewed Irish action at the European Championships at the top of the show, particularly the swimming with Darren Frehill, I should say. But Cathal Dennehy, freelance journalist, joins me now to preview the athletics side of things, which begin on Monday, because an exciting Irish team of over 35 athletes have begun to depart for the European Athletics Championships, which take place in Munich from Monday, August 15th. They run until the 21st. European Athletics Championships will see 1,540 athletes from 47 nations battle it out in 50 medal events over the 7-day schedule, with a strong Irish representation on each day. Previous European Championship medal winners Thomas Spar, the 400 metre hurdles, Kieran McGeehan in the 800 metres and indeed in the 1500 metres, as well as Mark English in the 800 metres, will spearhead the Irish contingent. Cottle, before we get through the runners and riders in other events, I suppose, let's just focus on the three big names there, starting with Ciarán Maguíon, who of course is arriving in Munich in great confidence after last week claiming a 1500 metre silver medal at the Commonwealth Games. The City of Lisburn athlete will renew rivalry with Scotland's Laura Murr this week in the 1500 metres event, while also having eyes on competing in a stacked women's 800 metres, which of course includes World and Olympic silver medalist Keely Hodgkinson of Britain. So all eyes on Ciarán Maguíon.
Yeah, I think Ciarán Maguíon is certainly one of the best Irish medal chances, without a doubt. I'd say her and Camilla McCormack, I'd put up there as the two biggest Irish medal chances, perhaps, just looking at the start list. I mean, Ciara is ranked 13th on her season's best, but that's no guide whatsoever because she hasn't been in a high-quality pace race, I suppose, all year, and her season's best was run that Commonwealth final, which was very much a wind-up. Looking at the field, I mean, you've only two athletes in the field who are quicker on personal best. And again, she ran her personal best in a championship final in the world final 2 years ago in a race where she wasn't really chasing the time. So I think, you know, Ciara is probably the second or third best athlete in this 1500 metre field, which is obviously her specialist event. Laura Muir of Britain looks the standout pick, but of course Laura, unlike Ciara, has gone to the World Championships last month. She's gone to the Commonwealth Games. So you never know at this point of the season. Talking to some of the athletes, a lot of people are running on fumes, you know, so I wouldn't say Laura is vulnerable because she wouldn't be coming here if she was vulnerable. But, I mean, if Ciara is ever going to get close to Laura Muir and perhaps beat Laura Muir, this might be the chance. But I would expect that on form, if she's at peak fitness, Laura Muir would likely prove unbeatable. But in terms of the battle for silver, if indeed it does come down to that, I think we're going to see Ciara against Poland's Sofia Inaoui, who she's often duked it out with for minor medals at European Championships indoors and out before. Inaoui was fifth at the World Championships final. And I suppose at the Commonwealth Games, where Ciara might have benefited from skipping the World Championships and racing some athletes who were coming in tired and a bit jet-lagged, perhaps Inaoui might have the upper hand against Ciara here because she's had those 3 weeks between the World Championships and the Europeans to sort of get in a training block and just get readjusted to home, whereas Ciara is now coming in, I suppose, carrying the effects of those championships and the emotional and physical come down, which from what was a brilliant achievement last week.
Well, don't say we don't look after you here in Game On, because not only do we have Cathal Dennehy joining us for this athletics conversation, RT Sports David Gillick also joins the conversation. David, great to have your company. We've gone through Ciara Maguíon there, and I said all eyes would be on Ciara. I should probably rephrase that. A lot of eyes on Ciara, likewise Mark English and Thomas Barr. So I'm going to pick your brain, David, on Thomas Barr, who will be looking to channel memories of his Wunderbar performance in 2018, which saw him claim a European bronze medal on German soil. The Ferrybank star has banked a valuable block of training since the World Championships in Oregon last month and will fear no one should he make it to yet another major final. Will he make it to yet another major final?
Yeah, you know, when you look back at, I suppose, Tom's progress this season, like he opened up back in May and then he was hampered with injury, and I think he probably maybe rushed things a little bit to try and get back for Oregon. He competed at the national championships. I interviewed him after that, and you know, he very much was kind of happy with the progress he was making in terms of coming back from injury ahead of Oregon. Went to Oregon and ran very well in his first round, and unfortunately then it just didn't really work out in the semi-final, and he was frustrated after that. He ran a time that he said he could do in his sleep, you know, and I think you could look at it maybe from a point that where he maybe came back from injury too soon and just didn't have the race strength to get through a championship. And I think, you know, off the back of Oregon, a couple more weeks of training, a bit of rehab in there as well. Like, there's no doubt that Tom is the type of athlete that can raise his game come a championship. And I think, you know, off Oregon, he had that championship experience once again, a couple more weeks of training and coming in here. Yeah, definitely. Like, we know the talent that Tom has. I think it's just putting it together when it really matters. Now, 400 hurdles is a fairly hot event in Europe. You've got Carson Warholm, world record holder. There's numerous other people in there that can produce really good times in a championship. So it's not going to be easy for Tom. But the interesting fact of this as well is in the 400 metre hurdles, along with some of the other sprint events, 100, 200, 400, and 100 metre hurdles, you have a top 12 rule. So if you're ranked in the top 12 in Europe, you get a bye from the first round into a semi-final. So therefore, you know, Tom just got to turn up on the semi-final, nail it and get into that final, and it's hurdles and anything can happen. So, you know, from that perspective, it's good. And I think Tom's the type of athlete, as I said, that can really raise his game when it matters most.
Absolutely. And I suppose, Carl, just to round off our conversation of these three athletes spearheading the Irish contingent, Mark English, of course, coming into this week, ranked 8 in the men's 800 metres and will have sights firmly set on taking to the start line in the medal decider. English has looked at his brilliant best this season, and his recent top 10 finish at the Worlds will see him take to Munich full of confidence come the heats on Thursday morning.
I think so, yeah. I mean, I think Mark English, while he kind of had everyone to fear and no one to fear at the same time in this field, you know, looking at the star list, I mean, you have one guy in all of Europe who's broken 1:44 this year, and that's France's Benjamin Robert. But, you know, when you look at the World Championships, Robert was a tenth of a second ahead of Mark English. He also didn't make the final. He was just fourth in that semi-final in Eugene, where Mark was fifth. So, you know, he's nothing to fear from an athlete like him. And then you have 12 other athletes in addition to Robert who've broken 1:45 this year. And you have a bunch, you know, you have the Olympic medalist from Poland as well who hasn't broken 1:45. So really you have about 15, 17, 18 men with very, very little between them on the track this year. And, you know, it's such a cliche, but the 800 is the biggest lottery, especially the men's 800 on a global and European scale at the moment. So you could get, like, Mark could get knocked out in the heat, or he could win the gold medal, or literally anything in between. So it's very hard to say what way it will shake out. But the one thing we know about Mark is he's a very, very astute tactical racer. We've seen that, you know, he's won 2 European indoor medals. He's won a European outdoor medal. And it would be brilliant if he could not crown his career, because he's got a lot more years left to go. But it would be brilliant if he could win a second European outdoor medal 8 years after his first back in Zurich.
I know we went in detail in the conversation on McGee and Barr and English there, but David, like, I mean, there's several other Irish athletes who certainly will be looking to make it into medal deciders. Adeleke, Chris O'Donnell, Sarah Healy, Louise Shanahan, and of course world indoor finalist Sarah Lavin. So, you know, across the board there's plenty to be positive about.
Absolutely. I think when you look at the strength and depth of this Irish team, you know, like, it's really, really positive. And all those names that you listed there are well capable of getting amongst it here in Munich. As Cottle did mention, like, it's that turnaround from Oregon, Eugene, Oregon, for the World Champs. There's also a few people there that had the Commonwealth Games. And, you know, when you're trying to kind of plan out a season, rarely do you have to plan 3 events or even 2 events in terms of one season. So it'll be interesting to see how people have responded from Eugene and, you know, coming into this. Like, Adeleke, for example, like, she kicked off her season over in the States back in, like, February. She's probably ran by this stage nearly 70 races. You know, it's an awful, awfully long season. So as Carl did say, they're running on fumes. And again, it's the physical and the emotional side of that. But again, you know, it is a championship, huge opportunity for the Irish athletes to get amongst it at a major championship. And one other event as well, I think, is worth kind of noting as well, is the women's 4x400 relay team. We have a phenomenal squad in that team. And I think, you know, this qualifying for the Europeans gives them huge momentum going into Paris as well, 2 years away. So you get into major championship, you have the opportunity to run fast, and that's a team that can definitely make the final in terms of the relay, and who knows from there.
Absolutely. So many household names. But this year's European team, Cahill, also includes an excellent blend of developing athletes, including recent Commonwealth Games silver medalist Kate O'Connor, who will have another busy week in the women's heptathlon, which gets underway on Wednesday evening. So it's great to see the youth coming through.
Yeah, I mean, Kate O'Connor is one of the rising talents in Irish athletics now for many years, and I suppose that the anoreks have had her eyes on her for a long time, because she's, you know, a very special athlete. Won Ireland its first ever multi-event international medal there. It was back in 2019 now at the European Under-20 Championships. Brilliant achievement. She had injury problems last year. She was very much on track to make the Olympics, but scuppered, I suppose, at the 11th hour by injury, but bounced back in brilliant style this year to obviously win that Commonwealth medal. Again, it's hard to know how she'll come out of it. You know, 7 events takes an awful lot out of you those 2 days, so let's hope her body and her mind are in the right place. And, you know, but it's very, very hard to send her to a European heptathlon. It's essentially almost the same standard as a global level, so it's going to be tough for her to repeat those kind of medal winning heroics. But I think on the opposite end of the scale, if there's one athlete I'd have to mention before we round up, it's 37-year-old Fionnuala McCormack, you know, the elder stateswoman of the Irish team. And I think, genuinely looking at this women's marathon that's taking place on Monday morning, I think along with Ciarán McGeehan, she probably has the best medal chance. Now, in the marathon, it's very, very hard to know what form everyone is in. You know, they don't race much, but Fionnuala ran a 10K personal best on the roads in Dunshaughlin back in June, 32.08 she ran there. And, you know, if you look at it on personal best, she's run 2:23.58. last December in Valencia. There's only one athlete in the field who's ever run faster than that, and that's Nienke Brinkman of the Netherlands. She's ran 2:22.51 earlier this year. And, you know, once you go beyond that, then you're talking a lot of athletes from Germany and elsewhere who run 2:26 to 2:30. So if Fanula, and again, it's the biggest, if she's here in form and at her best, then I think we could be looking at her first European outdoor championship medal. And she's obviously done it all. She's done it indoors and over cross country, and it'd be brilliant, brilliant to crown her career with a European marathon medal on Monday morning. And that goes to the line at 9:30 Irish time. So be a nice distraction for everyone who's in the office on Monday morning.
Absolutely, it all gets underway on Monday. You mentioned Fiona McCormick. That marathon women's team also includes Aoife Cook and Anne-Marie McGlynn. Hugh Armstrong will go in the men's marathon from 10:30 on Monday morning. Irish sprint star Israel Olatunde will be in action on Monday, as well as Sligo's Olympic and World Relay finalist Chris O'Donnell, who will lead out the Irish team for the afternoon session on day one. And rounding out day one for Team Ireland will be recent 1,000 metre record breaker Luke McCann, who will be joined in the heats of the 1,500 metres by Tokyo Olympian Andrew Koskeren. Both athletes will be aiming to make the final, which will include Norwegian star Jakob Ingebrigtsen. Withdrawals for Team Ireland: David Kenny has withdrawn due to injury, as has Alex Wright. But I suppose, just rounding off our conversation, David, a couple of names there I mentioned on Monday, who catches your eye?
Yeah, I think, you know, as Cathal had mentioned, like Fionnuala, definitely, you know, it's like I was on teams with Fionnuala over the years, and she's one tough lady, you know, and again, if she's here in good shape, definitely someone who can get amongst it. You know, it is warm here in Munich, it's got to be said. I know it's warm at home, but it's a little bit warmer here, so you've got to factor all of this in. But, you know, I think when you look at, you know, the youth coming through, great to see Israel part of it as well, phenomenal young talent coming through there. And again, it's about that, you know, when we're looking at Paris 24, it starts now. It starts by kind of getting our youth to these championships and giving them that exposure, the call room, the stadium, the noise, everything that comes with it. So I think, you know, that's one of the key elements of all of this now building up over the next kind of 2 years. But there's talent across the board. You know, I think, you know, Bo Cole and myself have kind of chatted about that. I think the opportunity here is to get our athletes through the rounds and get them that experience in a major championship. And hopefully we can get a bit of hardware to bring home as well.
Absolutely. It all gets underway on Monday morning. Best of luck to all of the athletes representing Ireland. David Gillick, Cathal Dennehy, thank you both very, very much. I'm sure we'll be checking in next week as the championships develop. But we are going to be turning our attention to horse racing in the company of Jane Mangan next. So do stay with us here on Game On 2FM.
RTE
2FM.
Game On.
Racing.
Now, it is Friday evening, so that means it's a huge night in the League of Ireland, but it also means that Jane Mangan joins us to chat all things horse racing. And Jane, given the weather, I suppose I was going to start here, but let's just start a conversation with racing in France, because 12 Grade 1 races run in France this season. The French themselves have only managed to win 3. Will another go for export this coming Sunday?
It looks like it, Shane, and I know it's nearly 30 degrees here. It's even hotter in Deauville, where the Prix Jacques Le Marois will be run on Sunday. There's a sale starting there tomorrow, and you can imagine there'll be plenty of money splashed around. But there's only 9 running in the Prix Jacques Le Marois, but there are quality 9 nonetheless. Ireland have a great chance. I would consider a favourites chance with Joseph O'Brien's State of Rest, fresh from winning his Prince of Wales Stakes at Royal Ascot. He's a star horse, reverting back to a mile from 10 furlongs. Let's see if he can be better over 2 furlongs shorter, because he's going to have to be if he's going to beat the likes of Inspiral and Prosperous Voyage. They're the 1-2 from the Falmouth at Newmarket. Of course, Inspiral was a brilliant winner of the Coronation at Ascot for John Godson. You've got Caribus in there, the Guineas winner for Godolphin and Charlie Appleby. Order of Australia also for Aidan O'Brien. Bathurst Leon, the probable pacemaker, he that travelled over from Japan. And Ervan looks like the leader of the home team. But it is notable, and Marie mentioned it last week as well, that the strength of our horses here in Ireland and in Britain, we seem to be able to put the French in their place relatively consistently at the highest level. To think that if in Ireland we had 12 Group 1s run and we had only defended 3 of them successfully, there'd be a massive endoscopic exam of our industry. So I'd imagine the French are probably doing the same.
Absolutely. Well, a bit closer to home, Tremor are midway through their August festival, while the Curragh host a quality card tomorrow afternoon. So before you bestow the wonders of Tremor upon us, talk to me about the Curragh.
Oh, well, I have to mention Tremor first because okay. My dad was down there last night and he said they had a barbecue. He said he hadn't ever felt a crowd on a Thursday night down in Tremor like it. Obviously, the weather is a big help and the beach is nearby. But if you are in the Waterford area and you're sick of swimming, maybe pop into the races because it is, apparently the atmosphere is incredible down there. Over to the Curragh tomorrow, the Royal Whip is all about one horse. Luxembourg has not been seen since finishing third behind Caribous and Native Trail in the Guineas back at the start of the season in May. He was last year's champion two-year-old, Aidan O'Brien's leading light heading into the three-year-old season, and we've only seen him once. So he's got his seasonal return in the Royal Whip Stakes. Aidan saddles three of the six runners here. Georgeville and Insinuendo are the main two on ratings that could give Luxembourg a fright. But if his main target is the Irish Champions Stakes, which is run at Champions Weekend at the start of September, he's going to have to be winning this.
Okay, well, while we're on a world tour at the moment, so we've gone from France to Tremor to the Curragh, Ireland also well represented in Kentucky this weekend.
Yeah, it's such a small world nowadays. The Beverly Dee, last week we were running in Saratoga. The Beverly Dee is running at Churchill in Kentucky. Five runners, a very small field, and a little bit disappointing the size of the field. But Lily Pond takes on the likes of Rougier, and I think Lily Pond has a place chance. Rougier probably a realistic favourite there for Chad Brown and White Birch Farm. But Lily Pond is a decent filly over here without being a star. Let's see if she can win a top race in Kentucky. And you mentioned League of Ireland. There's a lot more sport happening. I'd like to mention, if we can, Hurling for Cancer takes place next Tuesday at St. Conlett's Park in Newbridge at 6 p.m. I, unsurprisingly, Shane, didn't get the call up. But you have
not yet.
Brian
it's not
Cody
until Tuesday,
managing
Jane.
A team.
It's not until Tuesday, not yet. Not the late call-up might come.
Oh, do you know what? They have a panel of 40 per team. I think they're okay. So they've got a lot of celebrities there. Rachel Blackmore will be there. Mary McCallaghan will be there. Good old Marty Morris will be there. There'll be plenty of Davy Russell obviously playing. You can give him an old shout. TJ Reid and so many more. So I'd say, Shane, they probably didn't need you and me to line out, but it's notable that we weren't even trusted with an old umpire's flag.
I know. I'll get my people on the there, people. We might have the chat on Tuesday. But listen, Jane Mangan, thank you very much for taking the call. Horse racing on a Friday evening wouldn't be the same without Jane Mangan. Listen, that is it for Game On. Unfortunately, we are all out of time. Have a great weekend. The weather's meant to be fantastic. Hopefully the sport follows suit. Do stay tuned to 2FM because Blondin Tracy is up next. A big thank you to Brian Moss and John Farrell for ensuring this evening's show ran smoothly. But from all of the Game On team, it is bye for now. 2FM.